The following tone is a reference tone, recorded at our operating level.
Everybody, and this is episode, what are we, nine now?
Nine
episodes in. This is the only trilogy other than Star. You know what I just realized? This makes us just like Star Wars. We're a trilogy
exactly
that's
like
hitting. Yeah, exactly like Star Wars. We're a trilogy that just keeps expanding. I'm not saying we're as good as Star Wars, but basically what I'm saying is we're the Star Wars of podcasts.
That's t-shirt right there.
Squat Cobbler, the Star Wars of podcasts.
Dun, dun, dun. We'll have to figure out which of our episodes were the prequels, though. I'm not sure. I'm thinking, actually, the first two of this series are two of the prequels.
Yeah, they definitely are. As far as the Alice records go, they are really the Jar Jar Binks of the whole thing.
I bet you we'll find a third compadre. We may not agree on what album that is, but I think somewhere in the mix there's one other one we can lump in there.
I'm sure that there is, and I have a feeling I know what your vote is going to be for that one.
Yeah, no spoilers, but yes, we'll be flagging that later on.
Yes, well, I'm going to give a spoiler right now and just say that, you know, finally we are here. We're at what I know it's the third album, but what I really consider the first real Alice Cooper album. We're finally there, and I'm going to give a huge spoiler right now, just up front, that this is my favorite Alice Cooper record. This is it for me. This is my introduction to Alice. I still listen to this album regularly.
It's in my top ones. I'm going to be interested to see. I'll be able to go through this. Certainly going to be number one coming out of this show, without a doubt, and it's going to stay high.
I'm so excited. I didn't even do the introductions that I was supposed to do. I just immediately started talking about Love It to Death because it's such a good album. I didn't even bother to tell people who we are. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to Squat Cobbler. I am Mike Belinsky at Official Pagan on just about everything. And, sir, would you like to introduce yourself?
Be happy to. Hey, everybody, I'm Kelly Tuhl at KellyTuhl on Twitter. So, yeah, I'm excited too because when we began to talk about doing this, I knew it would be really fun to visit with you on each of the albums and going through different thoughts on it. But if you're really going to be completists, that means we had to do steps one and two, which were pretty for you and easy action, and I didn't have to work much to prepare.
Right. And you know what's interesting too? Like, you talk about preparing for the record. Well, first off, I would say, like, I would assess it like I always hear people, especially Alice fans, refer rightfully so to Alice Cooper's career as basically like two different things. You know, the Alice Cooper group, of course, and then Alice solo. And the fans know the Alice Cooper records up front. And that, to me, it's three different eras because those first two records are really a different band.
I'd go with that. I think there's actually possibly in the solo career a couple of additional at least subgenres that we'll get to as we go forward. But yeah, I would say definitely three pretty distinct because the band that we talked about for the first two albums, it's a whole different deal this particular album.
No, that band was murdered by this band in the best possible way. Like, this band came along, killed that band, took their instruments, and used them right.
And I give the lion's share of the credit to this shift to the producer, Bob Ezrin. Do you, Mike?
I would say so as well, yeah. There's always a big debate, especially around people, like, I hate to plug my own band, but I'm in a band. And there's always a big debate that people bring up because we produce our own records. Like, is bringing in an outside producer a good thing, or, you know, do they mess with your sound and stuff like that? And I always kind of listen, like, I love hearing when bands release like demo versions of tracks sometimes, especially on like box sets and things. Like, I love box sets and sort of odds and ends collections because I like hearing the evolution of a song for me as somebody who plays not as well as Alice Cooper group or anything like that, but somebody who plays a little bit, like, it's really cool for me to kind of hear that artistic creative evolution of a song. And I think that particularly with the Alice Cooper group, this is where you really, like, if somebody came to me and asked me what a producer does, I would tell them to listen to the first three Alice Cooper records, because this is what a producer does. On the first record, like we kind of discussed, it was supposed to be Frank Zappa, and then somebody else stepped in, but really it was kind of the band doing a lot of stuff on their own. Then on the second record, you had a producer who literally called their music shit and couldn't care less about it and wasn't really that involved in it. And now you have a producer who really takes the reins and helps mold this band into what they're capable of. And it's interesting because there's sort of fabricated bands, I'm going to say, like particularly with pop music, where a producer or a manager finds somebody you can sing or somebody you can play and completely constructs their sound for them. And that's not the case here. Like, this is the best example of a producer because he took the little breaths of talent that we saw, particularly on the second record on Mr. and Misdemeanor. You know, we both commented on, like, that was the first kind of glimpse of what they were capable of doing. A little bit of that rasp and snarl in Alice's voice, a little bit more edge to the music. And I think what Bob Ezrin did, from my perspective, is like locked in on those elements that worked and then just drug it out of them and force them to listen to probably stuff like MC5 and the Stooges and things like that, and really just kind of drug them to where they need it to be. And that's, to me, the best example of what a producer does.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And this was a 19-year-old Bob Ezrin that produced this album, which is pretty amazing. And Shep Gordon, who is Alice's longtime manager, had kind of realized, hey, I need somebody that can actually produce an album to give these guys a shot. And so he had contacted Jack Richardson, who had produced some pretty big hits for the Guess Who. And Jack Richardson said, I don't think I'm particularly interested in this, but I'm going to send this 19-year-old guy out there, a Canadian hippie, to go ahead and give it a shot. Once he kind of took into Alice all the energy that the group could generate, not necessarily in a good way in their live performances, but he brought it, and it was just the perfect match of the energy that the band brought to it and what they wanted to do, and then him channeling it into more of that Detroit, MC5, Iggy Pop, Stooges kind of stuff. What a fine result it was.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a record, like I said, this is my first introduction to Alice as a kid. My dad was an Alice fan. Not really the first two records. That's something that I kind of went back and discovered on my own later, unfortunately. And when I reached that point where I was like, I have to hear everything Alice Cooper, you know, from this record onward, this is where the Alice Cooper group starts. And this is where it seems like such a dramatic evolution, even though we did sort of see little glimpses of it previous to this. Like, it's such a huge evolution, and that's really what Bob Ezrin did, is just he was able to hone in on something that maybe on their own they would have still gotten to at some point in three or four albums, and perhaps by that point who would have cared. Like, he was able to hone in on what was really there and drag that out of them so quickly. It's night and day listening to either of the first two records to getting to this.
Absolutely. So let's get into this bad boy. It opens up with Caught in a Dream, which includes the lyric Love It to Death, the title of the album. I think this is the one album that has the most songs where just a single band member wrote the song. Now, Michael Bruce, throughout the rest of this, you'll see him a lot of times for some of the biggest Alice Cooper songs. They were songs that he wrote exclusively, including Caught in a Dream was a Michael Bruce composition. But this album here, there's Neil Smith has a song, Dennis Dunaway has a song, Alice has a single writing credit on this one as well. Caught in a Dream, we immediately know this is not your previous Alice Cooper group.
No, absolutely. And it's, to me, like, the most important songs on any album are the first song and the last song. The first song has to catch your attention. And to me, like, I'm always big on, and we kind of touched on this before when I gave the recommendation, a couple of album recommendations where I've touched on. To me, like, I don't listen to songs over and over again. Like we talked about with the Rob Zombie record, I'm not a put a song on repeat kind of guy. I listen to a whole album usually. And so that's why the first and last song are so important, because the first song really sets the tone of the album. And then the sequence of the song sort of building to that last song, and Caught in a Dream is just such a great way to kick off an album. Because I started here, I didn't have the experience of, like, imagine kind of being like a teenager or like a 20-year-old guy at this time. And maybe you had heard some of the Pretties for You, Easy Action type stuff. And then, you know, somebody buys the new Alice Cooper record or whatever and puts it on. Like, this is not at all what you're expecting to come out in such a good way.
There's no wasted energy on this album. It's all really tight. Definitely moved out of the psychedelic mojo into just good old guitar-based Detroit rock and roll.
Absolutely.
How about you be our guide through the rest of the album? We start with the songs.
I'm the love it to death, like Sherpa, I guess.
Yeah, you Sherpa, and I'll Sherpa killer.
So we'll move on from Conan and Dream to I'm 18. Now, here's what's interesting. Obviously, everybody in the world loves this song. And I think for most people, this is like the pinnacle or quintessential Alice Cooper song. And the reason that I always tell people that Love It to Death is my favorite record is because, in my opinion, this is the weakest song on the album.
Interesting.
And I mean, obviously, it's one of Alice's biggest hits. It's certainly Alice Cooper Group's biggest hit. And to me, like, this is the weak part of the album. So when the catchiest, most known song is your weakest song on a record, and that's not me saying it's a bad song, just that to me, like, this is the least interesting song on the record, and it was a huge hit. So that sets the bar for me of how great this record is.
That's a great point, and I hadn't really looked at it that way, but there's a significant number of songs. I like every song on this album. I'm 18 would be in the bottom third of them. They're all good still. It's not that it's a bad song, but...
It's just such a great album, start to finish, that a huge hit like 18 can be the weakest or one of the weaker songs on this record.
Yeah, and it was also... Well, I mentioned that there are a lot of individual writing credits. This I'm 18 was credited to the entire band. That was actually a song that they were playing during their Pretty's for You and Easy Action sets when... Ezrin heard it the first time. He thought, he goes, you know that one song? I think you got a lot of good chance that I'm Edgy. That I'm Edgy song is going to be, I think we could do something with that. It is the prototype Alice song, top to bottom. It is absolutely, in a dictionary, if you want to have a song that says Alice Cooper, I'm 18 certainly fits the bill there.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm going to do another hard pitch right now on this concept of it being the weakest song. The prototype Alice Cooper song, the classic Alice Cooper quintessential sound that they just nail perfectly on the song, is, in my opinion, the weakest song on this record. That's how great this record is. If you even like Alice a little bit, you need to own this album. If you don't like Alice a little bit, you need to own this album so that you'll realize how stupid you are. And
how long you've gone without owning it.
Yeah, like you'll just realize how much of your life you've wasted up until this point of not owning Love It to Death.
You will be ashamed.
You'll email at us, you'll tweet at us, and you'll just be like, I'm a disgrace to my family.
Please forgive me. Hashtag please forgive me.
That's it. Please forgive me, Alice, is what it should be. Next up, we have Long Way to Go. I'm curious to hear your opinion on this song.
I like it. I like it quite a bit. It is definitely the least Detroit of this album, the least rocking. It's still a good rock song. It's not as kind of heavy on the guitar.
Yeah, this is a song that I know from a few Alice fans I've talked to that this is probably their least favorite song on the record, which is kind of interesting to me because just like 18 would be at the bottom for me. This, I don't know if it's my favorite song on the album, but it would definitely be like top two or three for me. And like you said, it's maybe not as Detroit rock as a few of the other ones, but it just has a cool energy and pacing to it, where it just kind of feels like it just starts. It reminds me of the montage at the end of a Scooby-Doo episode, like the classic Scooby-Doo episodes, where they're just kind of like running around like crazy, and it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, and you're not sure where they're going with it, but it's just fun to watch. And that's kind of the way this song feels to me. Like, they're just, it's not heavy per se, but they're just kind of like racing through the song, and it's just a cool energy after 18 has that sort of rock stadium anthemic kind of feel to it. It's kind of cool to hear something that sounds like you're going from a stadium to like a band in a bar, you know, racing through a song while drunken people are cheering them on and or throwing bottles at them.
And now I have a very embarrassing moment. Cannot believe that I attributed the Love It to Death lyric to Caught in a Dream, and true Alice fans were probably going, and Mike was nice enough to just let me hang out there and say it. As we were getting to talk about it and the song's running through my head, I was like, wait a second, this is where Love It to Death falls in.
But yeah, Long Way to Go for me is one of the top songs on the record. I don't know that it's my favorite. I don't know that I have a favorite that kind of bounces around for me. And I think I touched on this when we were doing, Easy Action. I listened to Easy Action, which was not nearly as difficult to get through as Pretty's for You. Pretty's for You really was work. That really was preparation to get ready for the show. Easy Action went down a little smoother, still not great. Right after Easy Action, I went right back to listening to this record. Just such a great song, great album. I can't stress enough. I'm trying to get everybody on my side for this. I feel like I'm rallying for this. Not that people are voting. We're the ones, you know, kind of placing them. But I feel like I need to rally anyway. Like, this is the best Alice Cooper record. Everyone needs to get behind me on this.
It's going to take a lot to shake it out of this top spot, that's for sure.
I mean, I think at least I can guarantee, I'm sure I can speak for both of us, that this is going to be our number one today. Where we diverge from here, this is where it'll get interesting from here out. Because I think there was no surprises up until this point. And then this is where the surprise factor is going to start coming in. From Killer on is where we're going to start to see where divergences lie. I was going to say, I'm really curious to hear your opinion on the next song, though.
So my second favorite track on this album, Dennis Dunaway wrote it, and it's Black Juju. And it's kind of a swampy, serpentine song about bodies needing their rest. We all need our rest. Sleep and easy sleep. It's just got a nice kind of voodoo vibe to it. We get to hear Alice's first significant scream when, as the song goes through about bodies need their rest, and then towards the middle part of the song, he gets softer and he's like, rest, rest, and it's all calming down. And then he tells you to wake up in a huge Alice scream and kick the whole band in the butt and they take off playing again. I really enjoy the song. It is, we'll get to my favorite one in a second, but it is a strong number two for me. Again, on an album where every song is great. How do you reside with Black Juju?
So I absolutely love this song. I love long songs. I love songs that kind of take the listener in different directions. And this is a great example because there's songs that are long just because they're repetitive. Like whether there's a really long solo in there or just a long breakdown or just a repetitive chorus that happens over and over again. Whereas I feel like with this song, you really kind of start and end in completely different places. There's, you know, a lot of peaks and valleys to this. There's a lot of ups and downs and, you know, there's slower, softer parts. There's parts where the band really takes off, like you said. And I love long songs. The only thing I would say with this song, and this is not a quibble with the band or with the song in any way. It's a quibble with the format that you listen to it on. I think this song works better on the vinyl record than it does on, say, a CD or listening to the album straight through digitally. And the only reason is because it's a longer song. It's like 9 minutes plus. I can't remember the exact length of it. I know it's the longest song on the record, though. A longer song like that, for me, always fits best at the end of a side of a record or at the end of a record, which is, it is the last song on side one when you listen to it on vinyl and is perfectly placed. When you listen to it on CD and you're listening to the whole thing without that break in the middle, it seems a little more awkwardly placed. You have three, you know, quick moving 3 minute rock songs followed by a lengthy, you know, 9 minute plus song. And that's just, that has nothing to do with the band or with the song. That's just the medium which you choose to consume the album in.
Yeah, an 8-track is just a horrible experience regardless. Because I'm sure that Black Juju on the 8-track, halfway through it, you got to hear it change tracks. And it, very impressed, though. The actual length of the song is 9 minutes and 9 seconds. So you were right. You were right on the money there. The first three songs were all 3-minute jobs, so basically on the first side, you get three songs, and the last song is basically the length of the first three. It does feel like an ending, at least the first set of work, and it's a great song. It doesn't feel like a 9-minute song because it doesn't really get overtly repetitive. There is repetition right through it, but it's so well done.
They go just so many different places with it that it's not, you never feel like, you know, they're dragging it out and trying to fill time. There's no filler. It's 9 minutes long with no filler in it. It is a lean 9 minutes. And my only minor quibble, like I said, is just that it's perfect on vinyl. Blast through these first three songs and then this, you know, kind of takes you through the second half of the first side of this record in a perfect way, caps it off in a perfect way, gets you ready to flip it over and listen to the next half. On CD, it's a little bit weird just because all of a sudden you have this 9-minute track that's like oddly timed when you listen to it without that break in the middle.
Yeah, especially when you get one beat later, Is It My Body?
Exactly. Flipping the record over, perfect. Perfect way to start the second side of the record. Absolutely perfect. That's exactly how you should start the second half of that record, especially after a really long, because Is My Body's like, what, 2.5 minutes, something along those lines. Like, I know it's a shorter track.
2 minutes and 39 seconds. You are an amazing man.
There you go. So I knew it was a shorter song. So, I mean, it's a perfect way to kick off the second half of the album after such a long track, and yet, you know, again, just the CD format. So I'm really just kind of pushing for everybody not just to think this is the greatest Alice Cooper record, but to listen to it on vinyl, or at least take a couple second pause, like pause your iPod in between, like you were switching the record over. You'll enjoy it better.
Turn your iPod over, turn it back
yeah.
on. In the past, for those of you who had been listeners of Snarkalic Radio and such, I would always tease Mike that I was the true Alice Cooper fan and he was a pretender. But as we complete this particular episode, here he is nailing song lengths right and left. And I'm attributing lyrics to the wrong song. So this is not helping my case right now. So I'm going to have to...
I will wholeheartedly admit you're the bigger Alice Cooper fan as a entire body of work. This is just my favorite album. And it's an album that I revisit pretty regular, probably once a week. I listen to this album all the way through.
And part of it's the diversity, because you take Black Juju, sounds like nothing else on this album.
Right.
And now when we go into Is It My Body, again, prototypical Alice Cooper song. Got all the chops for a typical Alice Cooper song, and this was written by the whole group.
Again, it's, for me, you know, kicking off the second half of the album, because this is something that was originally intended to be listened to on vinyl, perfect opening for the second half. A short song, great energy to it, that Detroit rock sound all the way through, like we talked about before. And what a great way to brush off, you know, you just went through this whole harrowing ordeal of Black Juju being, you know, 9 minutes long and it goes all these different places. What a great way than a short, punchy rock song to follow that up with.
Fantastic in concert. Alice now pretty regularly throws My Fabulous Body.
Yeah, and this is just another example where, like, at least speaking for myself, and I think you probably feel the same way, there's just not a bad song on this record. There's no missteps or misfires on this record. Now, unfortunately, we can't say that about every Alice record.
I would agree. Yeah, this is, for the vast majority of the original Alice Cooper group recordings, it's hard to find a bad song until we'll get to maybe Muscle of Love. We'll have some conversations. The next series, they kind of keep hitting... They're hitting for power on basically all of these. So. But this one is just top to bottom. You can't really find fault.
No, absolutely not. And then you go into Hallowed Be My Name. What are your thoughts on that one, sir?
Written by Neil Smith, the drummer, now real estate agent in Phoenix. If you have Phoenix housing needs, contact Neil Smith Realty. That's free, Neil, just from us, just to you.
Should probably come on the show as a guest to repay us. They're just saying.
So again, getting diversity again, that while we talked about this being a pretty much a Detroit rock, the band kind of kicking into that mode, you get some things like Hallowed Be My Name that still is in that vein, but has got kind of some nice quirks to it, a really kind of intriguing set of lyrics. This is one of my favorites on the album as well. It's one that doesn't get played live. Not a lot of people, when you talk about Alice Cooper, mention Hallowed Be My Name. But it's a really strong song. I enjoy it. You?
It is really good. And you know what's interesting? I'm sure, you know, obviously I've read the credits of the album before, but I never really put too much thought. You were saying how it was written by the drummer. That makes sense to me, because there's some really interesting structural and timing things going on in this that give it such a unique sound. And again, even though it has that kind of Detroit rock sound to it, it's another example of not only is every song on this great, every song really has its own identity. And this just doesn't sound like anything else on this record. But at the same time, fits in perfectly, because you get that Detroit rock punch to it, but just the weird timing and the structure to it, it's just something completely different.
Gets the least amount of love, and it should get more, because it's a great song.
It really is. And I wonder if it's just because, and you know, again, this is me, you know, shilling for best Alice Cooper record, but I wonder if it's just because too, like, when you have an album that has so many great songs on it, it's inevitable that people are just going to gravitate towards certain ones, especially like 18 is the song that everybody talks about the most. And not to keep stressing that point, but I think that's the worst song, the weakest song on the record. There is no bad song. That's the weakest song on the record, though. Everyone should agree with me. That's what I'm really pushing for here.
You kind of won me. You know, I was originally skeptical. It sounded like heresy when you said it originally, but upon further review, I really can't argue with you. And it is not because, oh, this is a bad song. It's just...
No, not at all.
When you stack them up against everything else, there's some very different creative flourishes that occur in the remainder of the songs that, not that I'm 18's basic, but there's just, I don't know, this is just an album of great, great stuff.
Yeah, I would take nothing away from 18. It's just the reason that I would say it's the weakest song is it's the least interesting song. Like, just like Hallowed Be Thy Name has the weird timing and structure stuff to it. Like, every song, Black Juju goes, you know, for 9 minutes plus, has all these different things to it. Like, every song has some kind of interesting thing that they do with it, whereas 18 is the most straightforward song. on this record, which makes it a perfect single. Once you get into the album, I just think the other songs are a little bit more interesting.
I would agree.
So anything more to say about that particular one?
Nope.
So Second Coming is next?
Yes, that is correct.
And that's the Alice written song, correct?
And I believe my confidence has been terribly shaken by a couple of early missteps in this podcast. However, I am going to stand by the following statement that I believe this is the only song in the entire Alice Cooper collection where he's the single songwriter.
What was his writing contribution to the first two records? I can't remember the credits offhand. Does he have many credits on that one in terms of writing?
They attributed, I think, every song to the full band. Okay. I'd have to go back and look, but I think they just listed all of them for that. And that's where you see I'm 18, which kind of came out of that era, also was attributed to all the members of the band.
So basically, this is the record where they learned about publishing.
Yeah, because things were gonna actually sell. And so right.
It's like, no, I wrote that song. We didn't write that song. I wrote that song.
And good enough for them. At least their big hit on this one, 18. That they all got a little bit of that action. But Michael Bruce, to get into Killer and a few other things, he managed to do pretty well on writing a few catchy little tunes from the Alice Cooper group. Yeah, I believe the earlier ones were attributed to everybody. Second Coming is, again, another very different sounding type of thing. So to have Hallowed Be Thy Name and Second Coming kind of going back to back, very different. And then also it's fairly interesting because Second Coming, to some degree, serves as a kind of soft intro. It ends and glides almost seamlessly into Ballad of Dwight Frye.
Yes, it does. And I like Second Coming a lot, but I really almost just think of it as the segue between those songs.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that because it's intriguing, but it's almost like a warm up for what is my favorite song on this album, which is Ballad of Dwight Frye.
And this is the one where, like, for me, the other one that vies for favorite song on this record. I go back and forth between Long Way to Go and this song, which are so different, those two songs. They sound nothing alike, but those are the two that I go back and forth on, which is my favorite song on this record.
And unbelievable in concert. This is where you really get to hear Alice exercise his very unique vocal stylings in many different ways. So for those of you not familiar with Ballad of Dwight Frye, towards the middle of it, it's about someone being in an insane asylum, being committed, wanting to get out of here. And Alice starts repeating how much he wants to get out of here, and it gets louder and more frenetic. And apparently, during the recording of it, for part of his recording of the vocals, they actually had him lie down on the studio floor and kind of covered him with folding chairs. So he was kind of underneath this mass of stuff so that there was an even stronger urgency to, I want to get out of here.
Which is really interesting because I love little like tidbits like that about bands and how they kind of got a certain sound or certain, just an energy to that sound. Because I think to focus in on that, the I want to get out of here thing, that is, what's that song, 6 minutes plus? That is the standout moment of that song, of a great, great song. The one that is one of my favorites on the record, has so many great moments in it. So, and live is easily my favorite Alice song live.
There was always a presence to Alice Cooper, even in the Priest for You and Easy Action. There was a presence that provoked reaction, and they were doing a lot of things on stage. But Ballad of Dwight Frye becomes kind of that first really strong set piece where you've got a great song. And there's a story that's told on stage, because this is the song that Alice comes out in a straitjacket, and he's singing that, and he fights out of the straitjacket at the end, and all kinds of fun things like that. It clearly supported the kind of stage show that they wanted to begin to put on, but you could just listen to it and hear the story. But then live, it sounds fantastic live, and then you've got a lot of fun stuff going on the stage while it happens as well.
It really is just such a great song. It's sort of like Black Juju in the sense that it goes so many different places stylistically, but whereas Black Juju feels more frenetic and more like you don't know where it's going, this has a lot more of a story to it. To me, it's almost like listening to an audiobook or a movie score with some sort of narration to it, the way that they walk you through the story. So it's not to take anything away from Black Juju. It's just a different approach to a similar kind of thing of a longer song that you really kind of settle into.
Yeah, it's a kind of a more fleshed out storyline beginning, middle, and end, told by the passion of the singing, told by the music, and live, told on stage. And Dark Shadows, the Johnny Depp version of Dark Shadows that Alice appears in, Ballad of Dwight Fry is in there. And what I was particularly impressed with is a lot of times, because Alice has had songs in a few other things, Wayne's World, Roadie, and some other ones, but you got like just little pieces of the song and they kind of cut back and forth. This one was actually knitted into the storyline untouched. So basically you had the lyrics of Ballad of Dwight Fry, including a young girl who was part of the storyline doing the initial Mommy, Where's Daddy part, which was just done perfectly. I was so impressed that they didn't damage the song at all. They fit it into that quirky movie. It had its moments. It had Alice in it, so that made it better, obviously. But it fit actually in the movie perfectly.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, not to go off on too much of a tangent here, because obviously we both love this record. We love talking about it. You brought up the Dark Shadows thing. I'm a big Dark Shadows fan, like the original series. And that movie is awful, but it really does have moments in it that are perfect. And that's one of them, the use of this song. Yeah. Like there really are perfect moments in that movie, which makes me hate it more. Because it's little glimpses of what could have been. And instead, you get that pile of shit around it.
Unlike this album, which you're it's riches. You're surrounded by riches on it. It's when I'm 18 is possibly the least strong song on there. That tells you something there. Where Dark Shadows, there's plenty of moments that are not good. But yeah, this is excellent in there. Actually, a lot of the Alice stuff in there when Johnny Depp, you know, thinks he's a woman and Alice's woman, he's like, that's the ugliest woman I've ever seen, and go talk to the Cooper woman and all that kind of stuff. Those were nice moments, but then there were a lot of not so nice moments in that movie.
No, there's terrible. Fuck that movie. That should really be your takeaway. If you walk away from this, you're like, I have to own this album. It's the greatest Alice Cooper album and one of just the greatest albums, period. And fuck the Johnny Depp Dark Shadows.
Go out and buy both. Get the vinyl version of Love It to Death. Buy a DVD or Blu-ray of Dark Shadows, and as you walk out of the store, throw Dark Shadows away. Well, watch it once to see Dwight Fry, because it's pretty awesome.
Honestly, there's a couple of great, great scenes in that movie. And now that I'm thinking about it, though, I think my favorite parts do, just like this, involve the way they integrated music into certain scenes. So I think musically that movie works at parts really well. It's everything else in the movie that drags it down. All right, so we're on the last song. I'm almost sad because I love talking about this album.
It is awesome.
It's 18 is the weakest song on this album. Such a huge anthemic hit. It is the weakest moment. That's how great this album is. And this would definitely be top three for me songs on this album. The final song on this album.
Yeah, I love it. Again, different, very, very different in terms of sound. It's definitely something that after a drink or two, you can lustily sing along with have the whole group. It's just a catchy little number. And this was actually the first, I believe, the first cover by the Alice Cooper group, because it was written by Harry Butler and Rolf Harris. It's a great tune. I don't know how they came across to add this one in, but it is... It's a really fun way. It could have also opened, I guess, although Caught in a Dream is a great way to open this album, but it's a great song.
It really is, and it kind of reminds me of, have you ever seen the original Evil Dead?
Of course.
The sort of mismatched music at the end of the movie. It kind of puts me in mind of that. Like it's almost like this, it's the perfect kind of weird, quirky way to end everything that you've just experienced.
Yeah, it is definitely... It is a whole different deal than the rest of the album, but it's just so fun, and it's just infectious. It will be the first of two covers by somebody with the first name of Rolf that Alice does. It's a fun trivia for you.
I feel like you can't possibly walk away from this at this point and not buy this album. And Rolf Harris wrote the last song on the album. Does that not sell you?
That's right. You got it. Rolf.
We all know him as the godfather of the stylophone.
Maybe some of us knew him as that.
I know him as the godfather of the stylophone. So are you familiar with the stylophone as an instrument?
I am not.
So it is a small synthesizer at a time when synthesizers were enormous, heavy, expensive, and completely out of the reach of the general public. This guy, Rolf Harris, was a big proponent of this small, affordable version of a synthesizer called a stylophone that used a stylus with a metal tip on it that you use to play along sort of a, there's like a metallic, instead of keys, it's like a metallic band across it that is separated into different keys, and you use that to play the notes on it. A lot of it is like bending notes together. It's not cool in any way, especially when you hear Rolf Harris's songs on it. Brian Eno used it quite a bit, especially on his work with Bowie. So it can sound incredible. There's great, great uses for it, just not the way, just not its intended use, which is something that I always like really, really love. Whenever you can kind of take an instrument and make it sound some completely different way. So that's kind of like a weird little thing. Like, I know it's a cover, but that was something I always loved because I play the stylophone. I'm very, very familiar with it from the Eno stuff. I'm a huge Eno fan, as you know, and, you know, big fan of those Bowie records and everything like that, which is why I bought a stylophone, entirely because of Eno and those Bowie records. So having that sort of connection, even though that's not an instrument that's even used on this, having the guy who's like the face of that in the same way that Kenny G is, you know, related to like saxophones and things like that, just a really kind of an interesting tie-in that that guy would somehow be related to this record. And his stylophone songs, like if you look up the Rolf Harris stuff, are the worst, cheesiest things. Like, it would make you want to break every stylophone that exists. So you have to instantly go and listen to any of the Bowie Eno stuff to learn that that is actually a great instrument with great potential.
So the Alice Cooper Group made Sunrise awesome. Totally, yes. Amazing. So
yes.
You're telling me there's a stylophone version of Sunrise out there that I don't want to hear.
You know what? Actually, I'm not that familiar with the original version of Sunrise. In fact, not at all, because I don't like Rolf Harris's music. I only know who he is because of the stylophone connection. So I assume it is, though, because that's what he's known for. He's known for his stylophone work, and it's awful. I mean, he plays it really well, technically. You just wouldn't want to hear it. It would be like saying you're the greatest accordion player in the world. Like, like that might be the case. You could technically be the greatest accordion player, but I don't want to hear that kind of music. And what really sucks is that the stylophone is capable of great, great music, as Eno showed us. There's ways to play that instrument and make it sound incredible. He just didn't do that.
All righty. So I think we're at the point where we need to adjust our rankings.
Yes.
So I'm not sure, Mike. I think it might be. Is Easy Action still on top for you? Did you want to reflect on it a little more?
I'm going
to
say even with the Rolf Harris thing, which kind of, you know, makes it a little shaky. No, this is my favorite Alice Cooper record by far. I could talk about every one of these songs for hours and hours. I love this album. It's one of my favorite albums.
New number one for Mike.
Yeah, yeah. Now what? Now here's the real question. Easy Action, Pretty's for You. Is this going in the middle?
Now, I'm going to have to put it at the top as well. I think we're going to have Love It to Death also residing on the top.
Wait, is this you saying that this is the greatest Alice Cooper record?
Of the That's three we have it. Reviewed, if it is not the, it is the second. And I'm just going to have to reflect a little bit further. I'm not convinced that there is going to be anything that can unseat this one, because as you really take this thing back apart and look at it again, it is so darn strong. So it is going to be staying at the top a long time.
And there's great, great records coming too. It's just that for me, like, this is the go-to record.
If someone had no Alice Cooper, and I was going to say they could only buy one Alice Cooper album, this would be the one I'd tell them to buy.
So I'm right. That's what we're partying with.
I think
with.
It pains me to say, but I think you're right. Yeah, I think See? You're right. That hurt. But yeah, I think we're going to have to go with that. And that's kind of a bummer way to end this episode with Mike being right. But I think he is in this case. When you're right, you're right.
Aw, thanks.
What would be awesome, no pressure, Mike, but since you do happen to have a stylophone, if you could maybe cling out a few bars of Sunrise, we could tack it on the end of this podcast.
I 100%. Well, I would love to record a stylophone cover of Sunrise. I'm 100% in.
Top to bottom, every song on here you can really, really enjoy.
The only negative thing about this is now I'm going to go and listen to Rolf Harris's version of that song, because I don't know that I ever have, because I hate his music.
This gets into, so Rolf, another Rolf, Rolf Kemp, or Kempf, wrote Hello Hooray. And oh my God, if you hear the original version of Hello Hooray versus the Alice version, almost ruins it for you, because it's so so hideous.
I expect wonder, more of the same if you look up his, I'm sure, stylophone-infused version of Sunrise.
That's what I'm concerned about, because that actually pained me to hear the original version of Whole Array. So, yeah, so we'll have to do a little bit of digging there and see if we can see. But that, again, it just points to the greatness of the band and what life they could breathe into what otherwise would have been a crappy song that all of a sudden becomes something pretty amazing.
Which is really, to me, the best thing you can do when you're doing a cover song. Like, I would never want to cover, like, obviously, like, I'll do Sunrise for this because I love the song. It'll be fun to kind of tack on a few bars of it. But, like, I would never want to cover a song that I thought was perfect. Like, you want a song that you can bring something different to the table with. I don't even have to listen to his version to know it's shit.
I'm pretty confident you're right.
Yeah, it's going to make you think there's no way there's a stylophone on those Bowie records.
Alrighty, we'll update the list. We'll put out Squat Cobbler number 9 with the updated rankings, and we will get back to kind of doing the recommendation chat for the next one. And then next up in the Alice Cooper Parade will be Killer, with some lyrics that I made reference to today because I was tired, and I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. We're just going to say that I know a little bit more about this particular record.
Oh, almost forgot the other little fun fact on this one, the cover.
Okay.
Black and white cover. The Alice Cooper Group, who, and this was so smart because this is rock and roll, non-psychedelia, get going kind of stuff. They are actually wearing, if you go back to like the easy action phrase and look at it, phase, and you look at the outfits that they are wearing, and they're at this point being dressed by the GTOs, and it was all just kind of weird, kind of glam rock kind of stuff. They're still wearing those kind of garish, gold lame, flowery kind of stuff, but by doing it in black and white, it adds an edge to it. You don't see any of that crazy pop to it. So they really smart choice on the photography in making it black and white to make them kind of just look a little rougher. But the other part was in the original, it's the whole group on the front, and Alice is kind of leaning, and then during the photo shoot, he took his thumb and kind of stuck it out the lower section of his body, possibly appearing as if it was an appendage that would be in that vicinity, and got that through for the original pressing of the album, and they eventually modified the cover to, I'm assuming, just black out Alice's thumb.
And it's funny you bring that up, because I do remember seeing like original pressings with that on there.
Yeah, we'll see for the blog post if we can put up the original cover and then the modified cover. And I think somewhere there's actually a color picture of that group shot too, and if we can have that included too, that would be great to kind of, so you can just see the entirely different tonality.
No, it's everything about this album works, from the cover artwork being in black and white to actually making a Rolf Harris song great. Everything about it's perfect. Go buy this album.
And with that, folks, I think we're wrapping it up, and we will be back in a couple weeks with another Squat Cobbler.
I'm right. This is the best Alice Cooper record.
You are the only censor. If you don't like what I say, you have the choice. You can turn me off.
I love the Monster Dog songs.